Good morning.
Morning. Are we early?
A couple of minutes.
Okay. Like. Oh, I gotta set this up right. Come on. Okay, that's better.
Good morning.
Morning. Good morning.
How's everybody today?
Okay.
Okay. Doing okay.
Good.
Ooh. Okay. I'll be back.
Okay.
So, Susan, you said we're doing a stuffed challah tomorrow?
Mm-hmm. So
what are we stuffing with?
Well, that's your choice.
Oh. So we have to have something available. Okay.
Yeah. So could be raisins, could be chocolate chips, could be nuts, could be, I don't know,
Nutella. Okay.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, good morning. Good
morning.
When we were in Israel and did a food tour, they were suggesting making a babka with challah dough and filling it with Nutella.
Well, that's sort of what we're doing. That's sort of how it works. Somebody taught me, you know, I would just try and like mush, like if I was doing raisins, just sort of like shove them into the dough, like knead them in, but it doesn't work well that way. But I have a good way to do it now. So, and then we'll braid it again. So the filling comes at the second part, not in the first rise.
So it's
the filling,
like,
right as we're ready to, just before we're braiding it. So we're going to, It's going to take a little longer because you have to roll it out.
Not- are nuts, they're not too dry in a challah? They don't?
I mean, I probably wouldn't put nuts in a challah, but you could.
Okay, I'm just kidding.
Nothing has to be wet. Because you basically roll it in. So it doesn't matter if it's wet or dry. Actually, if it's too wet, it'll probably have trouble closing. So it just is a matter of how much you use. Like if you put jam in, I guess. You just have to put enough so it'll still seal.
Okay.
So.
I'm looking forward to it.
It'll be fun. And then I think in September we're going to do a round challah. Because I have a cool way of twisting it, but that it's round. As opposed to you could just do a swirl. I'll show people too. Be fun. Trying to turn my kitchen into a way where people can see what everybody's doing.
It's the dough lately has been just so sticky, and I'm guessing that has to do with the humidity, but it's just dramatically different. And I'm afraid to add too much flour.
No, you could add a little more flour.
Yeah. Okay.
I never put the same amount of flour in any week. I sort of start with an amount and then I keep adding till it's at the check. So I underflour it probably to start each week and then just put it in as I go. So Okay. Well, it's 9:02. I don't want to. Okay. Hang on 1 second. All right, everybody, just make yourselves comfortable where you are. Barbara, you are not on the screen. Barbara, can you tell me Barbara who?
Barbara Smith.
Oh, hi, Barbara.
Hi there. Hi there. Hi, Joanne. I see you there.
Do you not have a camera?
I not have a face I want to have on camera.
All right. Well,
if that were the case, mine would be blank too.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Sorry about that, but yeah.
Okay, that's okay. Nice to have you with us. Okay, so, you know, this is our, it's like a learning practice time. Mm-hmm. There was an article today in the local living section of the Washington Post that talked about, you saw it, accountability for exercise, right? And part of any practice, spiritual, physical, or otherwise, when there's other people doing it with you, it makes it easier to do, right? To be accountable. That's what spiritual community is about. We could all pray on our own. We could all, you know, do mitzvot on our own. But the fact that we have each other together in all of these things, that sense of connection and accountability and reliability is what keeps us. I think that's the it's not just the fulfillment of being together, but it helps us to be better people when we're just not doing things all on our own. So here we are, mindfulness accountability practice, so that at least mm-hmm. once a week, right, you're mm-hmm. sitting for a few minutes, maybe more, but that you're sitting and just attentive to your inner life and to what is present in this moment. Mm-hmm. So as you have hopefully noticed, we have entered into the crazy, wonderful journey of the High Holy Days that is ahead of us. Last week, it began with Tisha B'Av, the ancient observance of the destruction of the temples in Jerusalem. We could have a different discussion about the place of Tisha B'Av in our lives today, when we're not necessarily yearning for a building of a third temple in Jerusalem, but how we remember things and how we hold on to things. But I think spiritually, that moment in our year is sort of like it's the bottom, right? And now we have this spiritual climb up toward Rosh Hashanah, and that mirrors like the things that we are going through in our lives at any given moment, not just now, but that we have these hills and valleys, and navigating that through our Jewish calendar can then apply to how we navigate that through our lives. So we are in this first sort of week and a half, because Tisha B'Av was on a Wednesday, a week and a half of weeks leading up to Rosh Hashanah. And as you read in our some of our really beautifully put together materials for a weekly midah, weekly mindfulness practice, just like in the Omer, where we counted through seven divine qualities, seven qualities that we ascribe to God, that especially Jewish mysticism has raised up as these emanations of God. And we are moving from slavery to freedom. We're moving from spiritual slavery sort of at this point to freedom. And the actual, the journey is the opposite of the Omer. So we start with the quality that is most close to us as human beings. A different time we can talk about the Kabbalistic expression of divine qualities. But each week I thought that I would weave into our mindfulness practice some thought about the quality that we're looking at this week in our spiritual practice of coming toward the High Holy Days. And it's, there are the ways that we understand God's presence in the world, given a mystical interpretation, the Jewish mystics, the Kabbalah. So I just wanted to start first actually with a quote from Estelle Frankel, who is a psychotherapist and an author and has written a lot about the intersection of Jewish mindfulness and spiritual practice with psychology and psychotherapy. And she wrote in a book called The Wisdom of Not Knowing. I love it. The human mind and heart are unfathomable and unpredictable. When we rest in not knowing and remain open to what is, we give ourselves and others the freedom to unfold and become, to say and do the unexpected. So I wanted us to just begin with a little bit of sitting. So again, remember to be, you know, you don't even realize sometimes like you're leaning forward, you're leaning, like let your body settle into where you are. And for just a couple of moments, like the rain has stopped a little bit, just be present in this moment and kind of sit with the unexpected. Rest in the unknowing. Be open to just what is going to arise in these couple of minutes that we're just going to sit. No particular direction, just be with the unexpected. Stretch perhaps. So being open to just what arises. This week's midah, the first midah of these 7 weeks, is called malchut, which is a little bit not, it's a quality of God. I wouldn't actually call it a midah. It is a divine aspect of God, means sovereignty. And it's the emanation of from God that is the closest to us, begins in humanity. It's actually like the character, almost like the majesty of the human spirit. It's what is closest to us as human. It's also called Shekhinah, which means the divine presence, actually the experience of the feminine in God. and comes from the Hebrew word to dwell among or to protect, like when God dwells among us in Exodus, l'shachen. So it's the experience of God that is closest to us, that dwells with us. So the Hasidim took these divine states that Kabbalah described and associated midot, Jewish values, with them, Jewish character values. And so the Sphira of Malchut is associated with the Jewish character value of humility, of anava. And so that's what I thought we would sort of connect to today in our practice. So the idea of anava, right? So if this presence of God among that dwells within us, being open to God's presence, this Shekhinah, this Malchut, right, is actually about knowing our own limitations, right? Which is what humility is, to sort of know what our boundaries should be in any given moment. So I was thinking about the inner work of Teshuva, right? That's sort of the inner life work that we do, in especially in these weeks leading up to the Days of Awe, from the idea to return again and again and again, to turn around in ourselves, to continue to look inside of us, right? That's the work of discernment, of repair and relationship with ourselves, with each other, with God. And so we're preparing ourselves. So when we think about anava, when we think about anava, we think in Musar terms about an idea that it's not humility. We often think of humility as like meekness, right? Or holding back, silent, cowering. But we're told that Moses is anav. So we know that Moses isn't cowering, right? He confronts Pharaoh. I mean, he's the most humble man on earth, we're told. So a Musar definition of humility, of anava, is how do we take up the right amount of space in any given moment? How do we be the right, our right selves? And that connection to Malchut, to God's sovereignty, to God's presence, is that that's that relationship. Like, where are we and where is God in our lives? The Magid of Mezrich, Rabbi Dov Ber, who is a disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, writes, the essence of serving God and all of the mitzvot is to attain humility. To understand that our physical, our mental power, our essential being depends on all the divine elements within us, and we are simply a channel for the divine attributes. So I want you to consider for a moment. Actually, I want to sit for a minute with that idea. And I invite you to just let arise for yourself, sort of where, I'm going to ask a question and contradict myself at the same time. Because part of Musar says that it's not that you have to attain a particular amount of humility, period. It's that it's actually situational, right? Because in some situations, we need to be, our boundaries need to be here, and in some situations, our inner boundaries need to be here, right? So it's not that we just have to attain the right humility, even for ourselves, but that it's a movable object, it's a movable boundary. Even with that, I think we, each of us individually on our own spiritual curriculum, tend to either not wrestle with this quality much at all, and we're pretty good at that, and we have other challenges on our spiritual curriculum, or we tend to have this one out of balance one way or another. Like, we just can't, we're working on finding that balance. So what I'm gonna invite you to sit with is just to like think about this week so far, situations you've been in, and just sort of, again, as an observer, right? We're not without judgment, but just sort of look at how you've done what you've done, how you've been in situations in terms of humility. What space have you taken? What space have you allowed for others? What space have you allowed for God in the things that have happened to you this week, even in the supermarket, right? Like, don't just think like, oh, big important situation, like any situation you've been in, because it's actually in those little places that we learn much more about ourselves, because we don't have time always to be reflective, and we can see sometimes who we are really coming through. So just sit with, like, how do you see yourself as needing to expand or contract the personal space that you tend to occupy in situations? Without judgment, to just sit with that and sort of look at this week. Okay? A little bit of knowing yourself. The practice of humility is, I think it's fundamental to who we are. And especially in this week of Malchut, it's fundamental to know who we are in order to make space in our, to have the right space in our lives for the people around us, for God's presence at any time and in this journey. The image that came up for me was, it's kind of like adjusting cooking on a stove. Like, you don't cook anything at the exact same temperature ever. And even the same thing, you're like I was thinking like the flame up, the flame down, the flame up, the flame down. And sometimes like it takes time sometimes like to get it to the right simmer even, right? And that's, Karen, you were talking about how challah is different every week. Like there's no one right. You can't just stick something on the stove and it's always gonna cook. Everything is different. So humility is something that we really need to be working and attentive to in ourselves so that we find that balance. We think about the famous quote from Rabbi Hillel in Pirkei Avot that says, right, if I am not for myself, who will be for me? If I am only for myself, what am I? And if not now, when? Right, that's that balance of humility. We can't be everything, we can't be nothing. We're supposed to we're supposed to find like that middle place, but it's adjusted all the time. So this first of these 7 weeks, right, trying to be present to the right amount of spiritual space for us to know where we are, so that we can begin on a journey of teshuva, of spiritual accountability and accounting for ourselves. I mentioned before the term spiritual curriculum, which some of you have heard me say before, but some of you may not have heard me say. And it's a Musar idea that each of us has our own, if there's like a universal human map, but for each of us, it's our own spiritual curriculum. What is called for each of us to have to work on is different. We wrestle with different midot in different ways because our souls are different. But it does describe sort of the path, the growth of the path of our soul that we're meant, each of us individually are meant to follow. And Musar talks about the soul as each of us being a soul. Not that we have a soul, implying somehow that it's like a possession of ours, but that we are each a soul. And so one of the places to give attentiveness in a mindfulness practice is to sort of how we are that soul, and where the voices, where the narrative, where the ego, right, arises that can get in our way, can be distracting. One of my Musar teachers, Alan Marinis, talks about the ego not as king, right, that we might talk about in therapy, but he talks about the real role of the ego should be as like the valet, right, the person who helps, the assistant, right, serving our soul, not being who we are, but serving us so that our lives become more aligned, that each of us is a soul. Let me stop for a second. I'm just curious what might be arising for any of you at this moment, or any questions or just thoughts or how crazy this is, I don't know.
I find that for me, taking up the smallest space is really the most comfortable. And now that I'm alone, having to be in situations where I take up bigger space is a real learning experience. In some ways, I'm amazed that I can do it, and in others, it causes me great anxiety to having to leave my comfort zone.
Yeah. That comfort is the ego, right? It's what's telling us, but so it's so great that you're noticing that, right? So then that's just to explore, like, so what's the balance between my comfort zone, my ego, but maybe what my soul really is needing to do, even though it's maybe not so comfortable. So just being able to notice that, right, without judgment, and seeing what truth will arise for you in that. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
And we're so conditioned in our society to think that humility is also just like to close ourselves down. And that somehow if we do need to even like step beyond what we think is either our comfort zone or what we judge to be the right thing, like there's so much of our inner judgment about how we occupy the space that we, the spiritual space that we occupy. There's so much judgment in our society about it. And Judaism is calling us to something different and to say, like, what's the, what is right in the moment? What is true in the moment? So like this practice of malchut, of sovereignty, God's presence, right? Humility, it is all about like the management of ego, right? More often than not, like the interjection of our ego, of our needs, of our comfort, of our narrative, right? The need to either impose ourselves, the however we want to control, right, is often comes from our own insecurities and fears, one way or the other. We might be afraid to be with a situation. We might need, feel like we need to be in a situation. Like it's a, it, there's, it's not like it's too much or too, it's just our own fears, our own judgments, right? And we're pushing or pulling ourselves in ways opposite to where we are judging ourselves to be, rather than just being, right? Just learning to be still and being. So humility is also about just our ability to show up and be appropriate in any particular situation. So I was thinking about, you know, on Rosh Hashanah, one of the Torah portions that we reread, of course, is the is what we call the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, where Abraham is called to take Isaac up on the mountain and sacrifice him. And there's a couple of times in Torah where, as people are called by God, they respond with the word Hineni, here I am present. And Rashi, a Torah commentator, looks at that word and he says that term Hineni actually implies not only readiness to take action, but a sense of anava, a sense of humility, a sense of knowing like the space that you need to, that answerer, in this case, it's Abraham, Moses responds with Hineni at the burning bush, like what's that right space? It wasn't just a Hineni of here I am ready to do what you're telling me, God, but how, Rashi says Hineni is also like, no, is implies anava, it implies humility, implies knowing where I should be, how much I should be in this very given moment. Like how can we say Hineni to every moment, to be right in the right amount of space in that given moment, which isn't the same amount in any given moment, it's just the right amount for that moment. Like, and that allows, right, if we say Hineni to ourselves, to the soul that we are, that invites the presence of others, their space, and it invites God's presence. It means I'm fully present. It means that I set aside my ego, right? If our child, if my kid comes to me and, you know, and asks me something, that I, when I put down what I was doing, right? So Hineni, I might have thought something else was more important, something else was calling me, but this is what's calling me in this moment when I say Hineni, right? Abraham said Hineni to God, not just I'm ready, rushing to do what you ask, but I'm here listening, or I'm trying to be listening, I'm trying to be most present. Now, I don't know about you, but like I don't hear voices too often, except when I'm really maybe sleep deprived. Like what is that call for us? Like that's what I was thinking about. What's that call for us? Is it like it's deep intuition? It's the practice of discernment, but that's why this practice is important, because it can sometimes be really hard to tell the difference between intuition and just the general noise and narrative that we are giving ourselves all the time. And so that's why this practice becomes important, because it allows, I believe, over time, those things to settle out, and we can sort of let the stories that we tell ourselves, recognize that they are the stories that sometimes we need to tell ourselves, but allow then the intuition, the discernment, the truth, to arise. With practice, we can hear, we can pay more attention, we can see more clearly, we can be ready on this journey to put aside other things to say hineni, right? That is how we can begin now this work of teshuva, to put aside distracting voices, to put aside the things that pull us away from seeing the clear truth of ourselves, that keep us from taking up the right amount of space. You know, the Hebrew word for place is makom. But it is also, makom is also used as one of the ways we refer to God, hamakom, the place. And so this week, this first quality of divine quality that we are thinking about and is helping us open our hearts on this journey of teshuva is hamakom, the place that we make within ourselves for God's presence. So I'm going to sit now for a few more minutes, a little bit longer than I've given us. And first, I just want you to get comfortable again. Find your breathing. I've been talking more. So before I give you something to even let arise, I just want you to sit for a couple of minutes with that breath, noticing your breath. You can close your eyes, lower your gaze. Not lower your gaze, lower your gaze so you're not looking at anything in particular. And just be noticing your breath. Just let your breath happen. You don't have to breathe. It, thank God, happens for us. And just feel the expansiveness, or notice the restrictions in your breathing today. Notice places of ease and places of tightness. You don't even have to breathe into the tightness. Just notice them. Just take a sense of where you're at right in this moment. Hineni, you are right here. To just be fully present right in this moment. And if distracting thoughts or noises arise, just smile at them and recognize that we are always pulled to distraction, but that we have the capacity to come back to hineni, to being present right in this moment. And there are days we might feel like a ping pong ball, distracted and back, distracted and returning. Distracted and returning. For that is teshuva, that returning over and over. Hineni. I am here in this moment. So allow for yourself to arise again, perhaps from this past week, but maybe something else will come up clear as day for you. A moment where by your actions, by your attention, you said hineni. You were present. What was that experience? What came with that experience of being totally present? and you might be grasping at that memory. And so perhaps a moment that you were not present, that in this moment of discernment and clarity, you can look back and go, wow, that wasn't it. I wasn't there. And just to note what that experience was like. We're not meant to fix it, but to see it so that we can choose differently or choose mindfully the next time. That wasn't me. Somebody's dinging. And just be with your experience of being present for something, an experience of hineni, or how it might have been hard. So are there thoughts or comments or questions that you might have? Anybody find themselves like during the week stopping for a moment, taking any of this breathing time or mindfulness time? Just curious. That's what a question without judgment. You could say, I show up here on Thursday at 9 and that's it. And that's totally great. I'm just wondering sort of how this plays out for any of you beyond our time together.
I think I use the breathing a lot in various situations, just to relax or under, you know.
I don't think that I do it that much, but I think I'd like to. It was very calming.
I agree.
It's a lot easier when there are people to be accountable and in relationship with, for sure. For sure.
Well, you know, it's not only accountable. It's that I feel like I'm being given permission to take this time. And when I do it myself, and I try to do it myself, there are times I can't do it. But being told, now is the time, Phyllis, it's much easier.
Well, see if you can, if you're wanting to tell yourself another time. I know that, like, for sure, when I'm practicing on my own, it's even for me, it's harder, right? There's a lot more you have to turn off. I know for sure I set timers, just so you know, like it's impossible to do like that. At least gives you because what that does also, it gives you an ability to let go. You're not wondering like how long you're going for, right? Or, right, you can set a timer just for 10 minutes of just sitting and turning everything off, right? Like, and timer goes off, and so you've had like, you don't have to wonder how long it is, or even 5 minutes, right? Or if you want to sit in you know, with just your breathing, like set a timer. So that way you're not, because otherwise it's natural, right? Our minds are going to go to like, how much more, how long have I been sitting? I wonder how long, right? So they're good. So that's actually a good way to also give yourself a short amount of permission, right? Where then you don't have to feel like distracted by it, by just the doing it.
How long was this last one, Susan?
Well, I talked for a little bit and I didn't notice the time, how long I talked, but then I actually set another timer for 3 minutes beyond that.
Seemed longer than that.
So the quiet at the end was 3 minutes, but before that I was talking. So you were sitting longer than that. I was I was giving you some guidance and instruction. I don't know how long that was. I would venture to say probably another 2 or 3 minutes. So it was probably about 6 minutes. And sometimes a word helps, right? Like our breath is a good focus. But you know, from this week, this word hineni, here I am, like right, just here I am right now. Just to take that, even that 1 second to just go right here, here I am right now, hineni. So this beginning of our journey of teshuvah, right? First we have to be present. Before we can do anything else, we have to be just right here. We have to know who we are, work on knowing who we are. We can't always know, but we have to work on knowing who we are and what space we take up and what space we leave for others and God within us and around us before we can make any amends, before we can do anything else. And so for me, that's why I think the journey starts. That's how I interpret this journey, beginning with this week of Malchut, of sovereignty, of Shekhinah, of God's presence, that's connected to the Midah of humility, to know that about us before we can take any more steps of Teshuvah.
So do you equate it a bit with being able to listen more, you know. I think of that as sort of being able to listen to someone else rather than, you know, talking, you know, really hearing what someone else is saying. Is when you're saying being there, is that sort of similar type?
I do think that's part of it. I also think that's part of humility, right? That's creating space for someone to be present. Like how much do we say and how much do we create space for them to say something and to really hear it, to like hold that whole container, right? If you imagine a conversation as a container, right? There has to be room for both parts of that conversation to take place, which means that it's not just like half and half up to the line, but how do we interact with somebody in a way that says I'm holding that space with you, right? And not in that space. I can imagine, you know, times I've done it well, times I've done it poorly, times where I've wished for more space that somebody else has granted, or I feel like there's not enough space for me. All of those things. And that is all an experience of humility, because it is that inner sense of paying attention to what is right for me in that moment. Well, I'm holding this space with all of you all week. A space of hineni, of being present where you are and present to what is true for you. So with that, I wish you all a great week.
Hineni.
Thank you. Shabbat. Thank you.
See you tomorrow morning.
Bye,
yes, come bake challah if you want. Make or twist or braid or whatever you like. 9 and 1 tomorrow. Have a great day.
Thank you too.
Bye.
Bye.